is important in the evening to reflect on the meaning of what we are doing, since we are spending the whole day practicing meditation. And during the practice itself is not really the best time to think too much about the meaning of what we're doing, so that we can really practice, but still we need a time to consider the meaning of what we're doing. So I'd like to give some reflection tonight. And I should say, I'm not interested into Buddhism. I'm interested in life, and if Buddhism does help to understand life deeply, then that's fine, and then I'm willing to explore Buddhism. But if it is not helping me to understand life deeply, then why for me to study Buddhism? So what does matter for me is life in its richness and its possibility of freedom. And I should say that Buddhism does help. One help, there are other, but Buddhism is it's quite an interesting way to explore what life is about for various reasons, and we'll explore that tonight. In many sutras, the teaching of the Buddha, it is said that the Buddha is really concerned by only one thing, is suffering and the end of suffering. And we could say that is nothing very religious about it. It's quite interesting because it may concern all of us, suffering and the end of suffering. And exploring that suffering and the end of suffering, it's usually explained in way of four types of reflections that came to be known later as the Four Noble Truths, although noble and truths may be not very accurate in this sense, and it may have appeared later, but this what we call now the Four Noble Truths express this concern with suffering and the end of suffering. So what does it mean, suffering and the end of suffering? And how does it concern us in our meditation? It seems that the Buddha's quest, spiritual quest, is grounded in clear seeing of the condition of a human being. Not trying to be, to find other way or excuses. He was not distracted by the Vedas that could give a lot of explanation, explaining maybe further life or something like that. But what the Buddha was mainly concerned is really seeing within himself and around himself what is the condition of a human being. And what he saw, the condition of a human being, generally speaking, ordinary being, and he saw very clearly there is always something that is unfulfilled. There is something that is lacking, is not really fully satisfactory. And he inquired in that nature if it were only one case or two cases, or if it is really the condition of ordinary human beings. And he saw that this unfulfillment is really a characteristic of all ordinary human beings. So in the later tradition, it is stated very clearly that all existence or human existence, confused human existence, is unsatisfactory, is unfulfilled. But they very clearly stated confused existence. Actually, the term they use is stained existence. Because there is nothing in life itself that means it should be by itself unsatisfactory. when sometimes one speaks in Buddhism about the three characteristics of existence, speaking about unsatisfactoriness, impermanence, and selflessness, it is a little bit misleading to believe that is a characteristic of existence. Unsatisfactoriness, it is a characteristic of a confused existence, and that very important. Because if it is a characteristic of human existence to be unsatisfactory, so why meditate? Then it's going to stay unsatisfactory. We cannot go beyond the human condition. So the Buddha explored that, all the dimension of this unsatisfactoriness or this unfulfillment of human existence, and he saw difficulties, problems in ordinary human condition. Of course, death is one very important aspect of the human condition. Loneliness, meaninglessness, and difficulty to find a meaning in life. And fear and anxiety, here I'm taking modern way of expressing, because fear and anxiety, strangely enough, it does not come so often in the sutras. It seems that we change the way of expressing our suffering, but certainly fear and anxiety is a modern way of expressing one difficulty of human dimension. Now, speaking about meaninglessness, I imagine it is also much more accurate, acute, in the 21st century, because when people were taken in a tradition, a strong tradition, whatever religion it was, or it is, then the meaning is given. So that speaking about meaninglessness nowadays, it is true that it is also one difficulty of our human existence, to find a meaning. Sometimes we can't believe just in all tradition, because the way they speak or the language which I use sometimes is old-fashioned, and the work to rephrase that in a more modern way is not always done. So one may feel disconnected with aspect of our tradition or the tradition of our family, and then the question of meaning may arise. What is the meaning of life? And that can be a very, very deep questioning, and that can be the source of a lot of suffering. I have a friend of mine who is doing beautiful work as a physician, and he often tells me that for him the most difficult problem is the meaning of life, which is so strange because he's helping so many people. Yet, he said, why am I in this earth? So what justifies my existence? So meaning of life is certainly one problem, and we know that presently people may try to escape this lack of meaning by many ways, trying to make a lot of money. Nothing wrong with that, but sometimes we feel it suddenly become absurd, only to make money that you can even not spend if you were even busy every day to spending it. You know? There's something more than just getting some comfort, you know, or through drugs, or many other ways to escape this absence of meaning. So it can certainly be source of suffering. So death, loneliness, meaninglessness, and fear and anxiety as a condition, aspect of normal human existence. And the question, the inquiry is about, can we go beyond that? Or is it so inherent to human existence that the way it is, and we cannot go beyond that. So when the Buddha really inquired into that, it was not to get to this statement and suddenly resignation that the way human existence is. Buddhism has often been understood or seen as being pessimistic. And Nietzsche said the Buddha was too sensitive, like too sensitive to pain, you know. It's delicate. It's interesting to see that certainly a misunderstanding of Buddhism, and I don't know which information they had at the time of Nietzsche, but certainly misleading. On the contrary, what strikes me when reading the sutra is the courage and the determination of the Buddha or the Buddhist tradition to really see life as it is and not trying to escape in promising, you know, paradise or something like that. No, seeing life as it does present itself to normal human beings. And wondering, is that all there is about a human existence? Or is there something more? Is it an obligatory condition that we should be limited by that, that we should suffer from that, and that there should be unfulfillment, unsatisfaction in life? So I think that may concern all of us. Sometimes we experience those difficulties in life, sometimes they are less present, but we know they are there as a ground. They're there for each one of us. So it's not that we can say, well, those preoccupations are superficial preoccupations, they are deeply concerning human existence. So when the later tradition says that it is human existence, confused human existence, then is bound by unsatisfactoriness, by unfulfillment. So it is important to understand, they have to say confusion, which means that it is not this unsatisfactoriness, unfulfillment is not inherent quality of a human life. It is linked, conditioned by confusion. As long as we have a confused way to relate to our life and to our world, then there is unfulfillment. And I think that does make sense. If we see the world in a confused way, how can we really expect from the world something that is in agreement with the nature of the world? Imagine a pilot seeing the landing place, and so if he's 100 meters too low, for example, that's going to be a catastrophe. So this is a confusion leading very clearly to difficulties. So if in life we don't see life as it is, then our expectation, our way to deal with life is bound to be unfulfilling, is bound to be unsatisfactory because of confusion, not because of an inherent quality of human existence. And then we live in our life through this confusion as if we were in exile. We cannot really be at home in our lives since we see it wrongly. It's like we see it out of focus. So it's very difficult to feel at home in our life when we don't perceive it very clearly. And that's exactly what meditation is about, is seeing our human condition, life and the world very clearly. Now we can, of course, question, well, do we really see it more clearly with meditation, or is Buddhist meditation the proper way to see it clearly? That can be questioned, no doubt. But I think that is quite easy to see, that if we misperceive our human condition, the world in which we live and ourselves, this is easy to understand, and that there is bound to be suffering and unfulfillment. So for the Buddha, those Four Noble Truths is not like truths, that why the word is not proper, that is given, is some field that needs to be inquired, that need to be seen very clearly within our own experience, not believed. It's not a matter of belief. One should say, oh, I see the Buddha said that the life is unsatisfactory. That is meaningless. That doesn't bring any wisdom, any more freedom. We have to really inquire into life deeply, and if we see, on the contrary, that it's just pure bliss, that's fine. But here, we need to question it, to see it more clearly. But how do we see the world or ourselves or our life? How do we see it not clearly? What does make it so that we misperceive it? What is in our attitude, in our perception that distort the world and our life so that we are mistaken and then suffer and then are conditioned? In a sense, I think we never really stop to see life very clearly. We are always busy expecting something, moving things around, that we never really stop to experience our life and the world deeply. We don't have time to live. We are too concerned by keeping alive so that we are not open to live every instant. And this fear, anxiety about the future, we miss what's happening right now. Only when we stop, and meditation is stopping, when we stop and really experience deeply what's happening right now, can we see through the confusion. But for that we need to stop. Stop doesn't mean that we need to sit motionless. We could also do it while walking or working. It's just easier when we don't do too many things. That's why we here explore through very simple activities. So what's happening in life usually that we are always escaping from being deeply in touch with the reality of what's happening right now. What is the attitude that is making us move away immediately from what's happening so that we don't see it clearly? The first is resistance, aversion for what's happening. If it is not happening exactly the way we want, or there is an aversion, we don't want to feel, we don't want to be here to experience. As I said the other day, quoting Woody Allen, saying, "I have nothing against death, I just don't want to be here when that happens." But the problem is, if it is so for life, you know, I just don't want to be here when it is happening. That's certainly a problem. Death is maybe a problem, but it's even worse with life. I just don't want to be here when life is happening. I just want to be when life will happen tomorrow. And then we understand there is confusion. How can there be satisfaction? So the aversion with respect to what's happening, and it doesn't need to be a very deep, difficult experience, there is aversion. With aversion for the smallest discomfort, is boredom. We must get distracted. You know, boredom is not so nice. It's not dramatic to be bored, you know, so we could explore that. But before even thinking, we already bring some distraction. Don't want to be bored, you know. It's boring to be bored, so let's just get into something else. Or slight tiredness, slight discomfort. Sometimes it's deeper discomfort, but immediately there's a reaction, resistance to experience that. So we withdraw from really experiencing what's happening right now. So that is aversion. Another attitude, that blurb, the present experience in our life, is wishing something other. Being never satisfied, we always want something better, other. So we are here experiencing something or we are in life, and then we immediately want something else. Something else that would be better, that would be so nice if. There are some people that are so fantastic in this respect, they are really so characteristic. You bring the best place, or you go in the best restaurant, and they see something's missing. They say, "Oh, it's too bad. Today they don't have that." You know, they have 20 very good dishes, but "Oh, it's too bad. This one is missing today." You know, so there are people that are very, very professional in seeing what is wrong. You know, and desiring, that's exactly what I wanted tonight. You know, I was dreaming about that. They never knew they had that in this restaurant, but when they see it and they don't have it, that's exactly what I want. You know, a bit like children asking exactly what is missing. So in this way of wishing always something other, which means that when we are desiring for something other, this object of desire is just imagination. Because if we have the object of desire, then this enjoyment is not desiring anymore. So always desiring something other, then we don't see what is there. I would imagine then this person seeing just this dish which is missing doesn't see all the other good things. It's completely stuck, but that's what I want. So in our life we can experience that, or we get what we want, and immediately the second after we want something else. Yeah, that was good, that was, but next time, or now I want that. You know? The satisfaction is not very long for certain reason. So it means that when we are always desiring, anticipating, wanting something other, we are not here for what is right in our life, that what we're experiencing right now. Desiring something other. And there's another aspect that also cuts us from really seeing clearly what's happening, is just confusion. Confusion that makes us tell stories about what's happening, evaluation, good and bad, or conceptualizing the experience, and then we grasp at the concept and we are not anymore with the experience. And that's very, very clear in meditation, how easily we transform the experience in the concept, and we cling to the concept and we are not with the experience anymore. Let's imagine we can feel sensation, physical sensation with the breathing, and immediately we may cling to an image or concept of that experience, and suddenly we realize, but I don't feel anymore. I am with the image of breathing, I'm not anymore with the experience of breathing. I just switch to the concept of it, to the image of it. Feeling a sensation somewhere and then suddenly just making a concept, an image of the part of the body, then we are not anymore experiencing. The main energy of the mind is with the image, the concept, not with the experiencing. The experience cannot be kept. It is completely impossible to grasp at an experience of seeing, of hearing, of tasting, physical sensation can only happen in one instant and then it's gone. Seeing, for example, you need a light, you need eyes, and you need consciousness, the attention. When those three meet, then there is a seeing. But it's not possible now to see what was happening this morning, the light that was in the morning or at sunset. You know, we cannot see that. We can remember, but remembering is a kind of a vague image, mental image. We cannot see. So the characteristic of experiencing through the five senses is that we cannot hold on to them. By nature, they just disappear. By physical nature, is nothing very specific. Condition that for a sound to be heard, we need this vibration in air, and as soon as it is finished, there is no hearing anymore. We can remember, but remembering is not hearing. So we get the sense that we can still hold on, and the way we are holding on is by making concept images of them, and we keep that in mind, and we believe that we can keep those. We keep their experience. It's like if we are tourists taking pictures of every experience, and we have a very vast picture book, but the pictures are not the actuality. So the way that confusion can be brought at every instant is through switching from the experience to the concept of the experience. We explain that in our meditation, for example, with hearing. As soon as when there is hearing, I don't know what is machine, maybe a motorcycle or something like that. So as soon as I cling that I'm hearing motorcycle, I'm not anymore hearing all the fluctuation, not the sound. You know, I'm not hearing a motorcycle, I'm hearing the sound. And I may be mistaken, maybe something else, you know. Could be, I don't know, some small airplane or, you know, that the children play with or whatever. So I'm hearing a sound, not an object. But as soon as I switch, I'm not anymore in the experience, I'm in the conceptualization. And then I cannot see the nature of the experience. And I cannot see the nature of the experiencer. So confusion comes in the way that we feel not at home in our own life, in exile, through resisting, through aversion, desiring something else, and transforming the experience into a concept of the experience, not anymore experiencing really. So from this exploration, when we start to pay attention, to be aware, we realize that because of those three, desire, aversion, and confusion, then life is unfulfilling. Not because of life, because of desire, aversion, and confusion. That what make life unfulfilling, that what make life appear to be in exile. And this is not inherent to human condition. This is something that we can inquire into and go beyond that. So that's why the unfulfillment aspect of human condition is not a necessity. It's just based on this presence of desire, aversion, and confusion. So the second noble truth is expressed, is a description of this way that we are not in touch with reality, and that lead to unfulfillment. The word usually used is samudaya, which means arising together. So are the conditions that make an experience being unsatisfactory, being frustrating. And the conditions are the presence of desire, aversion, and confusion. Not the past. Sometimes we believe that we are conditioned by past experience, and sometimes the belief of karma, the notion of karma, is being explained like that. So what can I do? I'm conditioned by past actions. But that is not helpful, because there's no way that we can go in the past and undo the past. There's no way. The past is gone. But what we see is how the past may arise right now. So what am I doing with the past arising now? Through an image, of course, a memory. So now I have the choice. What do I do with this past which is in my mind right now? Do I cling to it? Do I investigate it? Do I let go of it? I have a choice. If I believe that it is because of my karma, because of my past, I have no choice. There's no freedom. To have no choice, there is no freedom. But to accept, I have a choice. This is more demanding, because if I have a choice, I have the responsibility for my own freedom. I have the responsibility for my own conditioning. Nothing is holding our freedom but ourselves. Our confusion or our wisdom. And that's what meditation is about. Taking the responsibility for what am I doing now with my present situation, with my present conditioning. Do I assume my own freedom and liberty, or do I neglect it, avoid it, avoiding my own freedom and responsibility? There is one sutra explaining that very clearly, which is called the two arrows, where the Buddha said there is no difference between an ordinary person and a wise person. Both are experiencing difficult situation. There is no way we would imagine that a wise person will not be sick, will not lose a friend or husband or wife or children. So they said there is no difference between an ordinary person and a wise person. Yet, when an ordinary person experiences a difficult situation, this person laments, complains, he said, beat his chest, it's very dramatic, and look for sensual pleasure as a way to escape from the difficulty. I identify with the situation, solidify the situation through conceptualization. But when a wise person experiences difficulties, this person does not lament, complain, beat his chest or her chest, does not look for sensual pleasure as a solution, does not conceptualize, does not identify with the situation, and thereby the person is free. He said the first person is like having hit by an arrow, take another arrow and hit himself or herself with a second arrow, exactly at the place where the first arrow came, from the second sense of life. So explaining here very clearly that the condition that makes something as suffering, as unfulfilling, unsatisfactory, is not past action, is a present disposition with respect to the situation. Either one attitude of escaping, of negating, of confusion, or an attitude of taking the responsibility, openness with what's happening right now, which is the wise person. So in our meditation, every instant, the way that it is set is for us to explore the difficulty that may arise. Don't need to be very complex difficulties. And the way that one may react through desire, aversion and confusion. Recognizing this desire, aversion and confusion, and maybe seeing it through, letting go of desire, aversion and confusion, and then experiencing freedom. Right now, in the experience, in the meditation, it's not that we need to practice 4 years in order to experience freedom. Doesn't mean that it is so easy, and you say, tomorrow I'm just going to spend the day in freedom. Well, if it is the case, so much the better, but that's not just a matter of decision. Yet, this possibility is within us every instant. Every instant is not that we are lacking something, we lack some tool, that sophisticated tools will be given only at the second, the third or fourth retreat, and then you will get the specific tools to experience freedom. Everything is there for us every instant. But I think what is important for us is to explore. If we stop believing that the present situation needs a transformation, improvement, then what can we discover? At least for exploration. If I stop manipulating the present experience, whatever it is, and I try to be completely open to this present situation, what then would I discover? So we try. And if we see that when I'm really with the present situation, deeply in touch with, intimate with that, I'm not satisfied, then that's fine, I will experience it by myself. But if I always run away through desire, aversion and confusion, I will never know what it is like to be fully present. If there is no desire, no aversion, no confusion, we are necessarily in touch with reality, we are necessarily present. If there is desire, aversion or confusion, or the three of them, then we cannot be present. So it's exactly what is at stake in our meditation, to be aware of the presence of desire, aversion and confusion, or the absence. Not through complex manipulation, but through being, the context is a present experience. So what am I doing in this case, in this present experience, as life manifests itself right now? And certainly we will discover how much we are escaping, how much we are wishing for something other. We spend our life with that, and we believe, or we have believed for so many years, that is the way to get the best out of life. The best out of life is by escaping life, which is very strange. And we are all very convinced that it worked this way. And of course, we go through the city, and that's exactly what they tell us. You know, all those big ads telling what we should wish for. This is so beautiful, this car, and this, all those things, you know. Sometimes it's even very clear in ad, you know. To get satisfaction, or you should desire more, you should desire that. It's amazing how shameless they may be, pretending that they know where you get happiness from. I don't know if all those people making those ads are so happy with their beautiful car or their nice television or something like that. Maybe I hope for them, but I have some doubts. So we live in a culture that does believe that the more we desire, the better we are. And that, of course, needs to be questioned. Doesn't mean that we don't need to maybe sometimes be seduced. Some of those are maybe exactly what we need, practically. It's fine. But at least it is not the happiness that they may promise. There is some doubt about that. So when there is cessation, when there is cessation of desire, aversion, and confusion, when that is in one instant of the experience, in one instant of meditation, then we experience freedom, a third noble truth. Maybe not lasting long, it depends on the balance of the mind to be sensitive at this time, but at least that is true freedom we experience. And we know in our experience that there is a deep freedom and deep satisfaction that did not come from satisfying a desire, from getting rid of something, but from just being completely open to the present situation. That for our fulfillment, satisfaction and freedom, everything is in each present situation. However it may appear, that seems so strange. It may appear like sadness, fear, tiredness, or whatever, but the full satisfaction and freedom is to be found there. Because it is the only experience we're experiencing now. Not in something else. Because something else is not happening. And the tendency we have is, I will be present when I get rid of all those problems. Then I will be present. When everything is perfect, that's cool, I'm going to be here. But before, I just need some adjustment. Then we spend 40 years meditating, adjusting things, you know. And, well, I will be present next time, everything is perfect. So it's better just to discover that by being open to any situation, we'll discover this situation is perfect, even though it does or does appear through many difficulties. The confusion around those experiences gives solidity to those experiences. There's not resignation. When we'll see those through very clearly, again, sadness, fear, anxiety, or whatever. Well, if we can see that very clearly, then we see the solidity, the heaviness that they have was due to our way of relating to them, not to them inherently. We were giving them this power by the way we react to them. And if in meditation it were not changing the solidity of those experiences, then that will be misleading. It will be strange to say we will find freedom and satisfaction in those difficult experiences. In this deep sadness, if I can find satisfaction, fulfillment, it is because through the opening myself to that, the density and the way it will appear will change. But only through my being open completely to that. There's no bargaining. So we saw that by inquiring into the nature of human existence, we saw that as long as there is confusion, there is an unfulfillment. Seeing clearly through this confusion, if we can let go in one instant of confusion, desire, aversion, there is a cessation of those, and there is freedom. And then the Four Noble Truths is in the sense, what do we do then with that? How do we manifest that? In a sense, is how do we engage in the world then? If there is some clarity, if there is some freedom, how do we engage in the world? We can say that we can explain the Four Noble Truths in this way. What do I do with this freedom? And the freedom is not only freedom, there is also a deep sense of responsibility. That then I will choose a way of life that is up to this freedom and sense of commitment and responsibility. But I will not go in this aspect. I may speak another evening just precisely about this aspect. I think it's quite interesting. So tonight we saw quite a few aspects of the meaning of what we are doing. In every instant of our meditation, we can deal with a deep realization of the Four Noble Truths. Not something that is abstract and we need to read and think about it, but being open to the present experience, we may discover those, discover for ourselves. In the text, it always said, "Ei pasiko, come and see by yourself." It's not a matter of believing. Believing does not help so much. We need to trust the process, at least to try it, to trust it. But belief cannot make it, only through experiencing. So now there will be half an hour for walking meditation. So just, again, being in your walking meditation, be open to whatever you are experiencing, feelings or bodily sensations, but also the mood in which you are. You may be tired, you may be maybe nice, I don't know. For some people maybe cold outside, for some people maybe very nice. And just feel also how you react. There is a pleasant feeling, an unpleasant feeling, boredom, freshness. Whatever is happening, just be here for your life that, as it is expressing itself every instant. Again, not believing that your presence is in feeling the feet very precisely. Where are you present when you are walking outside? It's a strange question. Where are you present when you are walking outside? Maybe present in looking. I don't know if the moon, if we see the moon tonight, we certainly see stars and sky. Being present in the way we are looking at the sky, the stars, or the trees, or feeling the breeze or whatever. Just be aware, where are you present when you are walking outside?